This is Fresh Air. Gary Sinise is best known as co-founder and director of the Steppenwolf Theatre Company in Chicago. The company, which has become internationally known for its innovative productions, launched the careers of actors like John Malkovich, who worked with Sinise for years, and Laurie Metcalf, who now co-stars on Roseanne as Roseanne's sister. Sinise starred in and directed a Steppenwolf production of John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath. It opened in Chicago and moved to Broadway, where it won a Tony Award for Best Play. Sinise received a Tony nomination for his role as Tom Joad. Last year, Gary Sinise made the leap into film with his adaptation of Steinbeck's Depression-era novel of Mice and Men. He directed the film and starred in the role of George, which was played by Burgess Meredith in the 1939 film adaptation. John Malkovich plays the hulking but mentally slow Lenny, who was played by Lon Chaney in 1939. Sinise's film has come out on video. Our interview was recorded last year when the movie was released theatrically. I asked Gary Sinise why he wanted to remake of Mice and Men.
I actually became very familiar with and friendly with Elaine Steinbeck, John's widow, during the development of The Grapes of Wrath. It was while we were on Broadway that I asked her if she would give me the rights to Mice and Men, because I knew that our run on Broadway was ending soon, and I was going to go back to Los Angeles, where I live, and try to make movies again. And I wanted to go back with a very specific project, and this was a story that I loved.
As someone who not only got your start on stage, but is, you know, internationally renowned for what you've achieved on stage, do you have something of an approach avoidance relationship with movies?
No, I want to do it. It's much easier to do theater. You know, you don't need a lot of money to do theater. That's one of the things my high school teacher always said, and that's why I started my own company, is if you want to act, just go find a space and do it and act. And it's very easy. You don't need any money to go find a basement somewhere and put some actors together and get a couple of chairs and, you know, do a play. That doesn't take any money, but to make a movie, you know, you've got to rent the camera equipment, the editing equipment. You've got to process the film. You've got to cut it together. You've got to put some music in there. That all costs money. Then you got to find something. Then you got to finish it and dub it and finish it all. You got to pay the actors. You got to pay the camera crew. You got to pay all those people, the costume designers and everybody. Then you got to find somebody with a screen, you know, that'll play that movie. And in theater, it doesn't take that. I wanted to immediately go to work as an actor and not come to Hollywood or go to New York and bang on somebody's door and hope that I could get a part. But we were an actor's company who wanted to go right to work and do difficult and challenging roles right from the beginning. It wasn't about making a living at that point. It was about making good theater and growing as actors. And I think on that whole history and that bed of nurturing really helped me. And now I feel like I'm starting a whole new phase. I'm able to kind of transfer from stage into film in a way that a lot of actors don't have that kind of background.
Well, you once described yourself as a troubled, mixed-up kid who turned around his life in high school in a production of West Side Story.
Oh. Where'd you read that?
Oh. It's an article. I couldn't tell you which one.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right? I mean,
I did say that. I must have said that because that is true. I was kind of a screwed up rock and roller in high school. And then me and some rock and roll buddies of mine, I played in a lot of bands. So I always did like performing. And me and some of the rock and roll guys from the band saw that they were performing West Side Story. And we thought it'd be fun to go jump around and be in a gang. So we went and tried out, and a bunch of us got in it, and all of a sudden I discovered this other thing that I really loved, and it was this teacher in high school that kind of brought that out of me and reinforced something that I guess was inside there, but I just didn't know it was there.
I know a lot of men always thought it was silly to have singing and dancing gang members. That didn't bother you?
At that time, no. I mean, there were girls in the play.
Oh, I see.
It was fun. They were all of a sudden was dancing with girls, and girls were around, and it was a way to meet girls at that time too. You know.
So you were a shark.
I was a shark.
So what did you do to be Puerto Rican?
Makeup.
Uh huh.
That was kind of funny because this is, you know, it's the North Shore of Chicago. There aren't a lot of Puerto Ricans up in Highland Park. So, you know, we did the makeup and, you know, I was Peppy. Peppy the Shark.
So did you get any featured songs? I mean, did you get featured lines within songs?
No, I had a couple lines, you know, like bottles or knives or guns or something. Chains.
What are you going to rumble with?
Yeah, yeah, right. Rumble, rumble, rumble. I don't know what I said, but it wasn't, it was very moving. I remember, that was at a time in my life where we had just moved. We had moved around a lot, and moving as a high school kid, you know, when you're that age, you know, you're really rooted in your friends, and you're making acquaintances, and and when you move away from that, it's very difficult for a young person to, like, find a new group of friends. And so I was kind of very rebellious and not getting along well with my parents at that time. So I was having a lot of trouble in high school. I wasn't going to class, and I wasn't reading or studying or doing anything until I discovered the theater. And all of a sudden, it made me want to go to school and just work in the scene shop and paint sets and hang out with these theater people that were very different from the kind of folks that I was hanging out with. And this teacher was somebody who really turned me around. You know, I can't say that I had one of those teachers that had enormous effect on me. And all of a sudden, then I was, my parents were, you know, all of a sudden, because of that, I started communicating with my parents in a way that we hadn't been communicating for a while. And they started coming to see the plays, and all of a sudden, the troubled kind of kid who was really looking for something, all of a sudden, his family life changed, and his, you know, schooling changed. I still graduated late because I was such a jerk in the early part of my high school that I didn't have enough credits, but still, I found something that really made me want to learn.
My guest is Gary Sinise. He directed and co-stars in a new film adaptation of John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Gary Sinise is my guest, co-founder of the Steppenwolf Theater Company. You were 18 when you co-founded Steppenwolf Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So were you still in high school then, or were you out?
I had just gotten out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I went immediately and found a church and just kept doing, you know, theater. We just asked this church if they would let us work in there at night and do theater, and they said yes. And I just kept on doing it.
Critics have used words like brave and daring to describe some of the performances in Steppenwolf Theater Company. When you directed shows, did you feel that you were really pushing people to the edge of their own capabilities? What does it mean to be brave and daring on stage?
Well, I think being stupid is part of it.
What do you mean by that?
Being kind of silly and stupid is part of it. I mean exactly that, being uninhibited enough to let anything come out and to attempt anything without restriction. And that's one of the things that, because we were isolated in this basement, and, you know, it was 20 miles north of Chicago, and there wasn't any other theater around there. It's not like we were in, you know, one of many groups in a theater community. We were isolated in this little basement in a suburb, and it was almost like we, you know, at a certain point, we didn't care who came or how they reacted. We were just doing it for ourselves. And so we were kind of rebellious and kind of idiotic, and we just, you know, there was the one time I can remember us trying to, you know, get some people into the seats and do something for the audience was a miserable failure. We thought, well, let's do a musical.
What'd you do?
And we put our own musical together. It was called Mac Anything Goes Over the Rainbow, and it was a Harold Arlen, Cole Porter, and Kurt Vile songs, and it was kind of a hodgepodge of all their stuff. And we thought, well, let's make some money. Let's do a musical. You know, nobody's coming to see our axe-murdering plays and, you know, these bleak things that we were doing and, you know, dangerous things. Nobody's coming, so let's do a musical. Well, I mean, you can't just do a musical. You have to be able to sing or dance or something. So it was a horrible failure. And that was that. After that, we decided, let's never again attempt to do something simply for the audience that we will think will make money or be commercial or bring in a crowd, but let's just stick to our guns and do what we want. So there were many times where people just didn't show up to the plays, and I can remember we didn't care. We'd just entertain each other that night. We'd go out and get some beer and put on a play. We'd just improvise for each other and kind of do these things all night. We called random nights, and we'd do a random night whenever we wouldn't get an audience, and that was quite often.
What if there was one person in the audience? Would you do the play, or would you do the random night?
If there was one person in the audience, yes, we would do the play. We would ask, you know, I mean, whoever was an usher or selling tickets that night, we'd just have them go sit with that person so they wouldn't feel so bad if we do the show.
I think John Malkovich was the first person from Steppenwolf to break out into movies and to really become nationally known. Were you at all jealous when that started happening?
That was a difficult time for our entire theater company. I remember I was the artistic director of Steppenwolf. This was 1982. And I was the artistic director and also the director of the first play that we took to New York called True West by Sam Shepard. And at that time, we were I was very much pushing to kind of open our you know, scope and look for a new audience and build our audience into a more nationally based audience. So in 1982, I decided to take one of our shows, and it was True West, and John and I went and were in the show at the same time. And I remember, you know, both of us were on stage the whole time. He did get, you know, a lot of attention. The role was very flashy. He was very good in it. And there were times where it was difficult. I remember, and the producers of that particular play made it more difficult because they would do things to pit John and I against each other and make me feel like I was not as important. And that was difficult, seeing as it was me who put it together in the first place. But once John got all the press, they obviously were focusing more on him than myself. And there was one time I came in, you know, and John said, "Well, I finally got my second raise." And I said, what do you mean your second raise? When'd you get your first raise?" I said, I didn't get any raise. And so I went to the producers and I said, "Well, what do you mean you've given John two raises? You know, you didn't give me, you know, that's not fair. We're both up there at the same time. You know, I'm the director of the play. I brought the show. We had this thing. I made it happen. I talked him into doing it." I said, "Well, I'm gonna give you 2 weeks' notice if you don't give me at least one raise." They said, "Go ahead."
Whoa. Wow, that must have really hurt.
That really hammered something home to me at that time. And John, at that time, was going out every night with Antonioni or somebody else, you know. And I was trying to get the producers to give me another raise, or just one raise, just to make me feel like they weren't going to say, "Screw you," and, you know, you're not important. And that part of it was difficult. I never had any problem with John getting any attention that he deserved because he's very good, and, you know, this was certainly a role of kind of a lifetime, and he put his stamp on this role, and I'm glad, you know. But I did direct it, and I did, you know, make it happen, and the producers of that particular show kind of ignored that fact at a certain point, and that became difficult to deal with. But John and I are still very close. We have no problems, and, you know, we get along, obviously, very well. So it didn't affect our relationship.
So when the producers...
I just learned something about the business at that point that I didn't know.
When the producers basically told you, if you don't like it, you're welcome to leave, did you leave?
No, because the bottom line was, it was my show, and it wasn't their show. And my leaving was not good for my play. And John and I were up there together, and it was important that I stay for the show.
Gary Sinise, his film adaptation of Mice and Men is now out on video. This is Fresh Air.